The Daily Connect Podcast.
It is Wednesday. It's the 16th of January 2019, and it's Stephen Scott back with you again here on the Daily Connect Podcast. Coming up, we will tell you all about See the Funny Side. We were talking about it today on the show. Well, we'll have a bit of a brief roundup of what the event is and how you can get involved and maybe become a blind comedian. There's an opportunity. Also, we are going to be talking about white goods and their inaccessibility. It's a topic that comes up a lot on our Tech Talk programme. Fortunately, there are organisations out there trying to campaign for better accessibility on these devices and, you know, good old-fashioned buttons. Yeah, remember those? So we're talking about that a bit later as well. But first, we talk about some of the events that are coming up in the southeast of England. Simon Pawley has been talking to Brian Anderson, one of RNIB's Connect Community Facilitators.
The Royal National Institute of Blind People, or RNIB, is asking for people in Portsmouth to join a network panel for the South East. Now, the panel will work with the RNIB to help change the lives of people affected by sight loss. But what does it really involve? I'm joined now by Brian Anderson, who's a community facilitator with RNIB. Hello.
Hello, Simon. Hi.
Now, tell us a bit more about this actual opportunity then.
First of all, Simon, it's an opportunity for people right across the South East network. So we're going all the way from Kent through East and West Sussex into Hampshire, up to Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire, Berkshire and Surrey as well. And what we're trying to do is the Connect community down here is very active. We lots of people are involved with groups, individual groups, and people are linking up among themselves. But what we're really looking for are people who want to step up a little bit and join a network panel or a committee who represent the community to RNIB and actually make us a little bit more accountable for what we do down here, make sure that we're meeting the needs of blind and partially sighted people across the communities, and that we're really just doing what they want and not doing it to them, but doing it with them.
Yeah, because sometimes a national charity can't always keep up with the nuances that occur in different parts of the country.
Absolutely. We've found that across our region, there are different levels of provision. There are different pockets of isolation for blind and partially sighted people. So some of our bigger counties, there are people who don't naturally gravitate towards the big towns and the centres where perhaps the local society has a base. They're out on the very often on their own, and they don't even know that there are other blind and partially sighted people around them. So what we want is a panel who direct us, who tell us what members of the community actually want us to do, how we can guide things and make things, just make life better all round for blind and partially sighted people down here in the South.
And again, this is RNIB addressing the fact that over the years sometimes there's been the criticism that it's kind of telling blind people what they should be doing, whereas this is giving the blind and partially sighted community a chance to actually take some control over that, isn't it?
That's true. We're finding now that the old image of RNIB is changing rapidly. We're doing some really good work with local societies in the southeast. We're welcomed in. We're not seen as any sort of big brother trying to do this. We're working together with people to shape the future and just make things a lot more accessible and a lot more interesting for blind and partially sighted people. But what we actually really, really need is for some members of the blind and partially sighted community, not just people with sight loss, but the people who support them, family, people who provide services for them. We want them to step up now and actually join with us in this group who direct and tell us what they want us to do in the future and how we can change the way we do things to be more appealing.
So for somebody who's thinking this might be interesting, what kind of time commitment is involved with this?
We intend to have a minimum of 4 meetings a year. Each meeting will take place around in various locations around the counties, or we'll do things over Skype or by teleconference, and we'll provide people with the support they need for that. Outside of those 4 meetings, there may be subcommittees. It really depends on what the panel wants and how they want things to move forward. RNIB, of course, will facilitate all of these things. We'll provide the administrative support that people need. If people need training to learn to use Skype or to use the teleconference facilities, And we can help them out with that. And if there's, you know, if there's a need to travel to a meeting in around the counties, then again, we'll help out in terms of that, just to make sure that people really aren't disadvantaged by the place they live or by their ability to get about out and about.
So how do you actually apply to get involved with this then?
It's very straightforward. I would prefer it if people would do it by email. We have a mailbox set up, so it's connectse@rnib.org.uk. Or if people want to, they can give me a call, and my work number is 07702509293. And I'd be really happy to talk to people about the way forward for this.
Give us that number again, please, Brian.
07702509293. You may need to leave a message because I work part-time as a community facilitator, but I will get back to people if they contact me on that.
And is there a time limit on this?
We've set a closing date for the end of January for people to make the initial application. What will happen then is, once people have expressed interest, we'll ask them perhaps to write about 250, 300 words about themselves and what they have to offer. And then it'll go to, we've already established a working group who are going to help to set this up. We drew that from people who already engage with RNIB. And that working group will send out invitations to people to join the panel.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing how that all works out. Brian Anderson, Community Facilitator with RNIB, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Simon.
Are you ready for this one?
How am I?
Okay. Why don't blind people skydive?
I don't know.
Because it scares the living hell out of the dog.
Oh.
See the Funny Side is back. 2019 in the East Midlands at Theatre Royal in Nottingham on 23rd and 30th of March. See the Funny Side is an initiative from the RNIB delivered by me, Georgie Morrell. We are offering blind and partially sighted people the opportunity to learn to write and perform a stand-up comedy routine. I will deliver a one-day workshop on the 23rd of March on how to write and perform a comedy routine before we all perform on the 30th of March to a live audience. To apply, you must be over 16 and be blind or partially sighted. And applications is dead easy. All you need to do is email us at connect@rnib.org.uk or call on 0303 1234 555 and have your funniest joke ready and tell us why you want to take part. Applications close on 24th of February 2019. We'll speak to you soon.
Funny and gross. Funny and gross. Very good.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Thanks to all of you for getting in touch with the programme today. If you want to continue doing that, you can. All you've got to do is get involved on Twitter and Facebook. We're at RNIB Radio there. We seem to start a bit of a craze this morning. We were talking a lot about the Bird Box Challenge on air. Of course, this conversation just keeps coming up. Crazy people doing crazy things blindfolded, which they really should not be doing. But We kind of started off another challenge of our own, which was called the Reach Challenge. We played S Club 7's Reach to start the show, and lots of you out there were dancing so much. Patricia, for example, in East Kilbride, got in touch near Glasgow. She said she almost hurt herself. She had collar surgery recently, and oh dear, she had broken her collarbone, got it fixed, and was dancing along with S Club 7's Reach, and nearly broke her collarbone again. Please don't do that. So hashtag Reach Challenge is now a thing, I think. Hopefully not. let's stay safe, folks. Let's stay safe. Right, let's talk about white goods and their inaccessibility. Alan Russell has been finding out more about that on this week's Early Edition.
It's fair to say we live in a very smart society. Now, I'm talking technology here because smart devices are everywhere. They're in our pockets, they're on our wrists, and they talk to us in our homes. In fact, they can do so much for us now. And if you are someone who's blind or partially sighted, you'll find that smart devices can make a massive difference to all sorts of things, from surfing the web, checking your bank statements, shopping online, even operating equipment, lights, heating and so on in the house. How accessible, though, are some of these new pieces of equipment? We're going to concentrate today on white goods, you know, things like washing machines, fridges, freezers, dishwashers, all that kind of thing. And to tell us more, we'll be chatting with Chris Lofthouse from RIDC. Chris, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Tell us first of all, Chris, about the Research Institute for Disabled Consumers.
Yes, we used to be called RICA until last year, the Research Institute for Consumer Affairs. We've changed our name, as you've rightly said, to the Research Institute for Disabled Consumers. We're still the same organisation. We carry out consumer research with older and disabled people, including blind and partially sighted people. So it's high-quality research based around people, and to that end, we have a consumer research forum or panel who help us with the research, and we've looked into white goods over quite a period of time.
When you think about perhaps the spending power of people with disabilities, add into that, you know, we are a society who are living longer. You know, it seems almost obvious that manufacturers should really be looking at accessibility from the drawing board stage.
Absolutely. Both me and you, and probably all your listeners, would agree with that statement. But unfortunately, at an industry level, there is little research or insight taken at the design level into the needs of the ever-increasing older population, and especially blind and partially sighted people. I mean, the market appears to be driven really by focusing on the younger generation who are using high tech. And also, in addition, with technology, the products change so quickly. In a way, this falls outside the remit of many charities and BI organizations who are, you know, are campaigning on other issues.
I use smart devices a lot, Chris, you know, from the smartphone in my pocket. I've got the Home Assistant as well. And there's been a real explosion in things from Amazon, Google, Apple. But what I've also noticed is since moving house, actually just last year, you know, we had to buy integrated white goods. So many items now are touch, and you're having to use screens for many of these. I'm looking at ones that perhaps don't have connectivity at the moment, but that whole tactile and easy feedback seems to be disappearing.
Yes, I think that's right. And what you've really highlighted is that the sort of two distinct kind of audiences that are there, the techies who, like yourself, use the smartphones, and then the other people, the other group, which includes many people who don't use technology but rely on tactile. And the market is really changing, and flat screens with no tactile feedback on white goods is becoming increasingly common. And really, in a sense, this has quite a big impact on people, because if people are used to using a cooker with tactile feedback, then to buy a cooker that suddenly has a flat screen that they can't use is quite a big trauma.
Also, when I was shopping around anyway, the items that I purchased online, because they fitted what I was looking for in terms of what they did, efficiency, and they were integrated appliances. But I couldn't actually go to a store to physically check these out because they were only available online. See, when you throw that into the mix as well, that's just another obstacle, if you like.
It is. We did research on how do people find a cooker if they're blind or partially sighted. We went with people to the shops, to the stores, and it was clear that really speaking to a sales person who knew the product range was a key issue, really, to solving the problem. And really, that's the advice, is if you can, go to a store and really be clear about what your needs are. You know, can you find me a cooker without digital display? We're talking department stores, and as we both know, department stores are becoming less common in our high streets, and more things are moving online. I mean, we believe that appliances, you know, do exist that have helpful features. They're not all digital, but it's very difficult for consumers to identify them, both either online or in store. The guidance that we had, which, as I say, was funded by Thomas Pocklington Trust, was called Choosing cookers, ovens and microwaves. It gives people an overview of the features. The key thing that's missing, which, you know, you moving house would want to know, is which make and model is accessible and has tactile feedback, or if you're partially sighted, has color contrast. This information, this consumer information, unfortunately just doesn't exist out there in a ready, easily accessible form.
When it comes to then smart integration, because, you know, I have a home assistant, I can use it for putting lights on and off, I can use it for plug sockets, my heating system. I was seeing more of these being integrated into things like washing machines, and again, you know, you're thinking, well, is the app accessible? Never mind the product, the machine itself.
Yes, I mean, this is a sort of for the future situation, because, you know, connected white goods, as far as we in our research has gone, looking at cookers and washing machines, they're few and far between at the moment. So until you get the next stage, if you like, the Internet of Things, as it's called, your cooker speaking to your smartphone, and then you having control with the voice output, that really isn't around at the moment, but it is possible for the future. The other issue, or really the question, why can't they put voice chips in the products? Mm. So that there's a voice output. I looked at central heating controls, and again, this is another issue that we've flagged up with the manufacturers.
I like my technology, and many of my family as well, even some older members of my family, are sort of embracing tablets and smart devices and the home assistants as well. And to me, if items can have apps which are accessible, that breaks down a lot of barriers. If it has an app that's accessible, then it's usable.
Absolutely. I think apps are for people that use smartphones and have taken that step are absolutely fantastic. There's no doubt about it. And I know the RNIB do have technology support for encouraging people. Just to hark back to the white goods situation, there still is this issue of the tactile being needed by a great number of people at the moment. It has been suggested to us that possibly products and services could be improved, you know, in the future, sort of by amending the Equalities Act. And there's other legislation about the European Accessibility Act. Well, it's draft legislation looking at the accessibility standards of products and services, but it doesn't take into account white goods. So we have to sort of watch, in a sense, what happens with the over-reliance on flat screens without voice and without tactile feedback, because consumer choice for blind and partially sighted people could get limited in the future.
We were talking about things which are important in the household, you know, washing machine, a cooker, you know, a fridge, a freezer. They are things which are up there in the order of importance, and the ability to use them is equally important. And as you say, let's not forget that not everyone is tech savvy. They just want something which has buttons that are tactile, which is dials that click maybe when they turn, you know, simple bumpons can be used. But it's getting harder and harder to find those when you want to replace something.
It is. That I think is the kind of real life issue. I mean, as I say, the two distinct audiences are the people like yourselves who have embraced the smartphone technology with apps, which has been fantastic, and has given you insight and control over things that you didn't have before. But now we're sort of going back to the ye basics, like you said, and ye basics are important. And also they're expensive, aren't they? I mean, we're talking washing machines, as you say, tumble dryers, cookers, fridges. These are big items that you buy for, you know, a long number of years. So it's a big purchase. But you can't get that washing machine because it's inaccessible, because it's got a flat screen control without any tactile feedback.
It seems like lots of complications, but some quite simple answers. But that's the difficult point, isn't it? Is getting the manufacturers to embrace this and, you know, look at producing equipment that many people can use.
Yes, I would urge people to tell us, because we have developed with a couple of other organisations a product review website. So if people have come across bad or poor products, particularly white goods that are inaccessible because of flat screens, please tell us, because on this website we're looking at mainstream products as well as specialist products, and people can tell us by ringing us, or they can fill in an online form, of course, on a review on the Rate It. The Rate It is the name of the website. And we also have large print versions as well. We have what we call non-digital options. And really, if people give us feedback about the problems of white goods, we can then, perhaps with Thomas Pocklington Trust, look at informing the manufacturers about this issue.
Chris, if people would like more information on RIDC or would like to learn more about the ratings website, what's the best way to do that?
You can ring us on 020 7427 2460. They can also go online to our website, which is ridc.org.uk. They will find a link to the Rate It website from that.
Chris, let's hope many more people do, because it will inevitably help the case for accessibility. But for the moment, thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much indeed, Alan. All the best.
And that's it for the podcast for today. Tomorrow we are back in the news review. We're talking with Ian Beverley and Sheila Armstrong about the week's news. No Brexit, though. We're going to try and avoid that if we can on tomorrow's programme. You'd be pleased to hear. Also, we are continuing to seek your views in our Daily Connect poll this week around employment. What's your view of employment, getting into the workforce, the application process, the interview stage, all of that? What's your experience been as a blind or partially sighted person? Check out the poll and the question, more likely the case, on Facebook and on Twitter. And your views will be welcomed on the Daily Connect and read out on the show. Show's back tomorrow, 10 till 12, live on RNIB Connect Radio, on the podcast, just after 5. See you then.
The Daily Connect Podcast.